So just a word with the very beginning, because Sefer Devarim generally, and even specifically over here, is a little different from the other books of the Torah, which is, there's something really ironic about this, and I don't want to get too far into it, but for the most part we're dealing with the speech which Moshe Rabbeinu gives. And there are things that we have become sufficiently sensitive to along the way that we'll need to pay attention to. For example, whenever we have our, and this we've been doing throughout Bamidbar at least, and the Vayikra as well a bit, touching Shemot, and that is going to be the distinction between the narrative and the laws. And a lot of people just assume that Sefer Devarim, Mishneh Torah, repetition of the Torah, what it's really about is the repetition of the laws, which statistically one can go and take, you know, all the laws that have been previously mentioned, and then look how many of them are being repeated and how many new laws are being taught over here. And by the time you finish that analysis, I think you'll come to the conclusion that on a statistical level, at least, it's a little difficult to say that this is just a repetition of the law. So if not, then what is it repeat? What is the Mishneh Torah? What is being repeated? Or what are Chazal trying to tell us? That's something that we need to keep in mind. But again, if you move back in bigger picture, Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking. And that itself makes it somewhat different. I always find it, you know, when I think about it, ironic, and essentially you're going to be stuck with an either-or, and that is that in biblical criticism, they talk about documentary hypothesis, and we'll talk about different documents, and therefore you're going to have the E and the J and so on. But when it comes to Dvarim, then you're going to have the Deuteronomist. And I understand that, because Deuteronomy, Dvarim, is different in style, because Moshe is speaking. But I just want you to think for a second. What if the style of Dvarim was exactly like the style of the other four books? And over here it says Moshe speaking. So what would the conclusion have been? That Moshe made up the other four books also? That's what I'm saying, is that essentially you're stuck. Yes, if Moshe is speaking over here, then that should be a different type of a style, because it's a different type of a document. Now, when it comes to speeches, and maybe everyone here is expert in speeches, but when one speaks, it also depends on the type of talk. There are different things that speakers try to do. Now, I do have a little bit of experience in this. Sometimes when you speak, there's a subtext to it. And the great thing about that is that 10 different people in the audience come over and goes, I know what you were talking about, which is great, because you don't always know what you were talking about, or you don't know what they know that you're talking about, but they know what you're talking about, and that's all that's important. And yes, I get this all the time. They always, yes, they know, and it's great. Rashi, in the very beginning over here, tells us that there's a subtext. Rashi solves a problem of the first pasuk, but he ends up confusing us. That's why Rashi's not here. And he ends up confusing us regarding everything else moving forward. Again, maybe it sounds even harsh the way that I said this, but I think what Rashi's doing is not as much trying to tell us pshat as much as trying to tell us that there's a remez over here. Again, that's very important. So I just want, in terms of structure, for you to know. I know that most of the time you're convinced I don't know where I'm going. So I'm going to speak about a remez in the beginning, I'm going to speak about a remez in the end, and in the middle I'm going to try to say some things about pshat. Ela devarim asher diber Moshe. So right away, these are the things which Moshe said. So here is Moshe speaking. El kol Yisrael be'eva ha-Yardain. So here's what Moshe said to the entire people on the other side of the Yardain. So if we're going to keep in mind that of some kind of an anchor in terms of time and place and so on, and that's where we're going to get confused, because it says Eivar HaYarden, so that should be enough, except then it gives us more information. Bamidbar, Ba'arava, Mulsuf, Bin Paran, Ubin Tafel, V'Lavan, V'Chatzerot, V'Dei Zahav. So there's just too much information. So what Rashi's going to do, and if you who want to look at Rashi, Rashi will then give you all kinds of information and telling you that each one of these places is a hint about something which went wrong. Now, again, please don't get me wrong here. I'm not saying at all, I'm not even hinting, I'm not even implying that what Rashi is saying is not ultimately absolutely correct. I'm not saying that. I'm not dealing with it, but I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that's not what the words say, is it gives us multiple locations, and receiving multiple locations is somewhat confusing. And all of this didn't necessarily deal with the other issue, is when it's said, or even better, what it is it's referring to. And I know that that is a little bit less clear, but what I will point out just very quickly, and I'm just pointing at one of them. In Pasuk Tet it says Va'oma Alechem Be'etahi, and at that time I said, but in Pasuk Tet Zayin Va'tzaved Shem Be'etahi, and at that time, so therefore, and there are more of those. which means it's the Ba'etahi, which Moshe is doing something over here. And, okay, he's speaking. There are references maybe beneath the surface of the text, but on top of everything else, there's the text itself. So therefore, what is it that Moshe is saying, or what is the major thrust of at least this first part of this first speech? Because the Sefer Devarim has numerous speeches, and yes, there's going to be whole sections of law, and some of those laws are repetition, and some of those laws are going to be new laws. But right now, there is a really specific agenda that when you go into that Rashi, you kind of get lost, because Rashi takes you to five or six different problems that are taking place, and Moshe is not taking us to all of those problems, at least in the revealed outward text over here. He's taking us to one really specific place and one really specific time, which is important. I will now tell you, I just said one specific time, so if we would bring all the Rishonim to the room, they would fight with me on that part. Because what they would say is that each time it says Ba'etahi, that then gives license to start debating what that was. And are these various Ba'etahis at that time talking about the same time or the same place or the same episodes, or we're dealing with multiple ones, which means that essentially we have lots of different, forget out the first pasuk, that's what I'm saying, forget out what Rashi may be hinting at, just trying to figure out what's going on over here is difficult, which is why I just want to strip everything away and just start reading, and then I think that we'll get a better idea without being, that's why I said that with Rashi what you end up doing is you end up losing the plot, because right away he takes you to every single sin. So it is perhaps worthwhile to start thinking, okay, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, and by the way, most of you should not think that way, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu and you're about to give a talk, so then where do you start your talk? What is your talk going to be about? What is going to be the focus of your talk? What are you trying to communicate? I mean, you're this legendary leader, prophet, you know, religious leader, political leader, spiritual. So now, what is it that you want to leave the people with? What is this message? And there is going to be a message over here. And even if you're going to give a message, so where do you start your story? You know, some of us would think very, very literally and would say, go all the way back to the beginning and just go in sequence as much as you can. If you remember, God sent me, you take you out of Egypt, and you know, I was born in the palace, and God put me in the palace, and when I tried the first time, people questioned my leadership, which is going to be something which is going to happen all the way through, but at the end, Moshe prevails, and he can talk about the plagues, and he can talk about, or for that matter, you know, once you want to start telling over a story, how far back do you go? Do you go back to creation? And God, okay, just remember, God created heaven and earth. And by the way, there are some scholars who got themselves all involved in something which I think ultimately are not good questions. You see, when you ask bad questions, you sometimes get bad answers, but they'll start asking, okay, what is included in Devarim and what's not included? As if to imply, what does Moshe know about, what does Moshe not know about? I think, for example, that one of the things which are mentioned is the Akedah. The Akedah is not mentioned. Okay, does that mean that Moshe doesn't know about the Akedah? Or no, that Moshe has a talk that he's giving. So Moshe doesn't mention the Akedah. So now, why would he not mention the Akedah? So what would the answer be? Because you're not, in a limited amount of time, talk about everything, right? And there could be some things in the background of great spiritual significance, but that doesn't mean that everything has to be mentioned. So I'm just saying is that when you look at the Book of Devarim as a book of repetition, so then you start getting all worked up, what's repeated, what's not repeated, that may not be the issue. And you know what? Let's ignore for a second that the book is referred to as Mishneh Torah, because just because a book is called something doesn't mean that that's everything about the book is that, right? Sefer Shmot is Sefer Geula. You're going to have to work a little hard to show that everything is about Geula. I mean, some things much more directly and some things not, and most of the book is not. Okay, so let's go back again, and we will hopefully now have gotten past the first verse. But we'll read it again. Eila drima shadiber Moshe el kol Yisrael be'evor Yarden be'midbar be'arava mulsuf ben Paran ben Tafel ve'Lavan v'chatzirot v'dezav. Achadasar yom mechorev derech har Seir ad Kadesh Barnea. What a wonderful non sequitur that was. I mean, that also should be because that did not say anything about where we are, you know, what's going on, but it's saying something. And maybe, if nothing else, it should be giving us some type of a frame of reference. So I'll get ahead of myself right now and say, I think it's actually really clear what Moshe is trying to do, at least over here, And that was a really interesting introduction to what Moshe is trying to do, because Moshe mentioned something. Moshe mentioned that 11 days was the journey from Chorev, traveling through Har Seir, to Kadesh Barnea. Now, some of us may remember what happens by Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea is where the spies were sent. So right over here, now you have to start thinking, so what is Moshe really starting with? What's really the point? Is this going to be about the spies? And I'll, spoiler alert, the spies are going to come up soon, but that's not the whole issue. It was an 11-day journey, so therefore, where's the starting point that Moshe is starting to tell the story from? And I just now ignored the first pasuk. What is the starting point? And the answer is, the starting point is leaving Sinai, which means when we left Egypt, and now we're going all the way back, when we left Egypt, there was a possibility that was mentioned in Bishalach that we could have traveled Derech Eretz Plishtim, but we're not going to go there because that's the easy, that's the closer route. Ki Karovhu. So instead, we take this longer way, but the longer way takes us to a place that we needed to get to, and what was that place? And that place was called Sinai. Which means that we had to get to Sinai, we had to get to Chorev. That when we left Egypt, there was a place that we needed to get to, that got added in at some point, and that's Chorev. Could be that when Moshe first was given his job, it could be that going back to a Bereshit perspective on Shemot, and for that matter, Bamidbar and Devarim, it could have been that we don't know how would he get to the desert, right? Brit Bein HaBetarim. And again, remember, Brit Bein HaBetarim, that's what's important. That's the most important prophecy or direction or directive in Bereshit, and that is you're going to be enslaved and you're going to go free. And when you go free, I'm giving you this land. Sinai is not part of that dream. Sinai is not part of that responsibility until we find out that, oh, that place is important. And it's not just a three-day stop, as maybe we thought it could have been in terms of various things that took place in Shemot. We end up staying there a while, which I'm going to hold on for a bit. But now it says that when we finally left, yes, I added in finally, that when we finally left, you'll see why I'm adding that. When we finally left, it was only 11 days. Which means, you know, of course, that 40 years off of your calendars. You didn't have to put away 40 years, mark off 40 years for this whole thing. 11 days. 11 days in order to get to that point that we can enter Israel from, or start the battle, or to prepare, or whatever happens next. 11 days. And by the way, I'll tell you all a secret. Those 11 days took us 3 days. Yes. Yes. No. It took us 3 days. Actually, we moved very quickly, perhaps magically, whatever, but it only took us 3 days. If you want, we can go searching for that verse that says that, but the commentaries noted and pick it up. So it was an 11-day journey, which we did in 3 days, but don't get all excited because the 3-day journey we ended up taking 40 years for, or however you want to phrase it. So time is fungible. That's really what comes down over here, is that you're going to go back to Gilligan's Island, 3-hour tour? Okay. So we end up taking so much more time, but that's part of what's going to be interesting about all this, is that nothing is predictable. There are things that we should be able to accomplish in our lives in a very small amount of time with somehow, because of whatever emotional or other issues that we have, take us a lot longer to accomplish it. And there are some things which may be remarkably difficult, but somehow we have this power of accomplishing it much quicker. And that's something which is really interesting and exciting about life. But here we're not just dealing with individuals, we're dealing with the nation. And over here, the starting point is, it was just in terms of Derech HaTeva, if you will, the natural process, we're being told in Pasuk Bet, there was an 11-day journey. V'yihi b'arba'im shana, don't you realize how bad that is? V'yihi b'arba'im shana. Do you now notice that contrast? It was 11 days. And now, v'yihi b'arba'im shana, b'shtei asar chodesh, b'chad l'chodesh, diber Moshe b'nei Yisrael, k'kol asher tziva Hashem oto aleihem. And now, in the 40th year, right, towards the end of the 40th year, what happens is that Moshe now tells diber Moshe b'nei Yisrael everything which God commanded him. Which now tells us something else. That even though we're told that these are things that Moshe said, these are things that Moshe said with God's instruction. So therefore, the authority of everything in Devarim is divine, even though Moshe is speaking. And yes, the more Kabbalistic way of referring to this is that the Shekhinah Diber, right, Migronosho Moshe, that there was divine ventriloquism taking place. But do you all now fully appreciate that contrast between Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Gimel? It was 11 days, and now we realize 40 years later, it's 11 days. So something happened which was really, you know, wrong here. something ended up taking so much more time than it could have or should have taken, and that's essentially where we now, again, sounds like we're beginning our speech, and once again, we're going to have another frame of reference. Acharei hakoto et sichon melech ha'emori, asher yoshev b'cheshbon. So we have the Sichon, the king of the Emori, who sits in Cheshbon. By the way, that will be important also as we move on. Et Og Melech HaBashan, Asher Yoshev Ba'ashterot Be'ederi. Which means that where we're up to right now is after some initial battles have taken place, which means it's not precisely the conquest of Eretz Canaan, but something has begun nonetheless. Be'ever HaYarden, Be'eretz Moav, Ho'il Moshe Be'eret HaTorah Hazot Lemar. Do you feel that we keep getting multiple introductions to this? And you know why? Because it keeps sounding that we're getting multiple introductions. And all of this is still a frame of reference. So essentially we're having some that deal with time and some that deal with place and some that deal with authority. And yes, it's easy to lose the plot. That's exactly what my point is. Okay, Moshe explains HaTorah. So that could lead us to believe what the book is about, but the question is what Torah means here. Hashem Elokeinu diber eleinu b'chorev lemor. So full stop. God spoke to us at Chorev, and I'm being very unfair now. I'm going to stop in the middle of the verse. So now you realize that Chorev was mentioned twice over here as a starting point, which means Moshe's telling a story. Moshe's not at this point, at least, going back to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. He will get to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. He will get there, but that's not where he's starting. Which means what Moshe's doing over here, as much as you think he is recalling the past and talking about the past, he is, but only for one particular reason, and that is because of the future. Because what Moshe's really going to do over here is he's going to speak about what we should be doing. And what we should be doing is being framed based upon what we should have done when we left that mountain the first time. Now, if I want to read that first half of the pasuk again, because it says that, right, Moshe Be'er Torah, Hashitem Hashem Elokeinu Diber Eleinu B'Chorev Lemor. God spoke to us at Chorev. Now, if I would not know the rest of that verse, and I had to guess, okay, what does it say next? I would say Aseret HaDibrot. And yes, Moshe is going to repeat the Aseret HaDibrot. Be patient until Ve'etchanan, right? He's going to mention the Aseret HaDibrot, but not here. Which means as much as I think that, I would have thought, okay, what's Chorev? Chorev is where we get the Torah. So what's the significance of Chorev? The significant Be'er HaTorah. He explains the Torah. So then we had a shocking end of the verse. Rav Lachem Shevet Bahar Hazeh. You have spent too much time by this mountain. By the way, notice the time frame again. And notice what I've already mentioned, that it took us 11-day journey. I'm telling you, we did it in less time. But when we eventually did it, but it took us 40 years to do it in less time. I hope you appreciate that. I can say some kind of joke about Israeli cab drivers or something, but I won't. Or any cab drivers for that matter. But I won't, because it's not nice. And of all things to say about Chorev, what's the takeaway of Chorev while you spend too much time over here? Do you realize what he just now did? Because if you don't realize what he just now did, I will tell you what he just now did. Then the problem is that the reason why you won't get what he just now did is because he doesn't say it. So we'll try it again. Do you realize what he just now did? He just now mentioned, without mentioning it, because that's what you do when you give speeches, and therefore everybody can understand what they want to understand, but I'm telling you what he did, which you don't have to accept. He just now mentioned the Chet HaEgel. Ah, see, I got you. You're saying, what are you talking about? Right, what are you talking about? You spent too much time there. So now you have to go back, why do we spend too much time there? Which means how long should it have taken? It should have taken as long as it takes to say 10 things. So what should have happened next? Thank you very much. We're on the way to Eretz Yisrael. And by the way, those of you who don't get it yet, what's the next stop from Chorev? Answer, Eretz Yisrael. Which means Chorev was a stop. We're on the way to Israel. Oh, we just have to stop at this mountain and get something, you know, we got to serve God at this mountain. Okay, but that's just a stop on the way to Israel. Israel is, I know that this is really bad, but it's okay. People think I keep talking about Zionist themes, but what can I do? I mean, it's the Torah is Zionist, and that's what's going on over here. What's going on over here is something went wrong on the way to the land of Israel. So now the trip ended up taking too much time, but you have to go back. Where's the... where does the plan end? Yes, you do all the planning, all the logistics. Okay, what messed it up? So the first thing that messed it up was we're telling, oh, God said, we're explaining Be'er HaTorah, which is really interesting. And instead of saying all the other things, I hope you all admit this, that if I didn't tell you the last part of that verse and I asked you to all complete this by yourselves, none of you would have gotten the right answer. None of you would have gotten what Moshe actually says. And this is so important, and this is so interesting, because now I'm able to understand, okay, what is going, again, what's the objective of the speech? So the first of all, there's this wonderful game with time that I keep pointing out, things taking too much time, and things could be done quicker, and things are taking longer. Fine, that's not the story. That meaning that's the background, is that we ended up not doing this in the way that we should have done. We ended up spending, right, we get to Har Sinai, we ended up spending almost a year over there. We never should have spent that much time. Rav Lechem, that's just fascinating. Let me read it again. Hashem Elokeinu diber eleinu b'chorev lemor Rav Lechem shevet bahar hazeh. Now, something else, and this is a little more subtle, and once you get this, you won't need me for the rest. Everything else then will become completely clear. If I had to now go back, right, and say, hold it, where are we up to in the Torah when this happens? Which means, what is the point that Moshe is focusing on? Does that make sense? Is that clear, my question? If I had to go now find, where is it that Moshe is taking us back to? No, he didn't take us back to the Akedah. No, he didn't take us back to creation. No, he didn't take us back to the flood. Right? Why? Because all that is not important right now. He didn't even take us right now to the Aseret HaDibrot. He didn't take us to the Tzrayim. He took us to one place. I'm not asking you where that place, we already know. But I'm asking you where that is in the, where did Moshe just take us back in the Chumash? He's rewinding, and where are we up to? Which Parsha? That was a very easy question. Which parsha did he take us to that God says, you spent too much time by this mountain? Do you like the question or you don't like the question? If you don't like the question, it's great. You can ask this then by your Shabbos table. Yeah, that's really good also. I couldn't find where God says this, which is good, or at least in these exact words. But where is that? Okay, what happens right after you spend too much time at this mountain, right? Okay, you have a guest, and the guest won't leave, right? Ever have those? So what parsha are we up to? Let's make it easy for us. Which book are we up to? We're in Bamidbar, and we're in Parsha Balotcha. Okay, good. I see that you're there. We're in Balotcha. Because it's in Parsha, you're not convinced about this. Look at source number 4 for a moment. V'yihi b'shana ha'shenit b'chodesh ha'sheni b'srim b'chodesh nale anan me'al mishkan ha'idut v'yisu b'nei yisur l'maseim mimidbar Sinai v'yishkonan b'nbar paran v'yisu b'rishana p'hi Hashem b'yad Moshe. That's when they start traveling. So where are you up to? You're in Parsha Balotcha. We're in Parsha Balotcha. We're in Perek Yud. So therefore, Moshe's speech takes us back. Again, this is, I told you, this is easy. The only problem is that a lot of us don't like to think when we're learning, right? Yes? We just want to be entertained. No, we like to think. We like to think. So Moshe did something interesting. Moshe just now took a Parshat Balotcha, and I'll say it again. That's really the key, because once you understand this, everything else hopefully become clear. So let's go back again. God said, you spent too much time by this mountain, which means it's time to leave. It's time to leave. Pasuk Zayin, back in this first source, Pnu usu lachem ubo har emori vel kol shchenav barava bahar vashvila v'negu v'chof hayam asher eretz kaniva lavona nahar gadol nahar prat. So, okay, we need to go and travel. Re'ei, Natati lefnechem et haaretz bo'u urishu et haaretz asher nishba Hashem levoteichem l'Avraham Yitzchak l'Yaakov l'teit lehem l'zarah achareihem. Now, just pause there for a second. Yes, we've got up to Pasuk Chet. Pasuk Chet just now revealed what is really the agenda. What is the agenda? Go to Israel. go to Israel. And yes, that's what all of this is about. The problem is that going to Israel has become very complicated. First of all, it's taken too much time. It could have taken less time. Secondly, we've had problems of implementing this destiny which God has given for the Jewish people. So let's say this absolutely clearly. The destiny, yes, going all the way back to Bereishit, which just now was referenced. Various parts of Bereishit were just now mentioned. This is the land that was promised, right? This references Bereishit. This references Shemot. This references Vayikra. This references what's been really the subtext all along, if you want, from the very first Rashi in the Chumash, that the land of Israel is the objective over here. One second. Over here, what we're being told is that you spend too much time in the mountain. So we say too much time in the mountain. It's not that you're a bad guest and you spend too much time here. It's that there's someplace else that you should have gone to. Which means, what really is the issue? The issue is that, you know, Chorev is not a nice place. It's a very nice place, right? It's very good. They probably serve great cheesecake, right, by the foot of the mountain, right? All the collective cheesecake of the generations of Jews is probably all collected there in a concentrated form, right? It's wonderful, wonderful place. But one would hope that they have good coffee also. One would hope. But that's not the issue. The issue is the next step. If you spent too much time. You were. Just go back to all the things. It was, right, 11-day journey, right? You should be someplace else. You spent too much time over here. You should be someplace else. What was now hinted at? Things were being hinted at, clearly. Why do they spend so much time in the mountain? Well, because they sinned with the eagle. They sinned with the eagle, and after the eagle, then they make the Mishkan, and so on and so forth. Again, they never needed a Mishkan. If you go straight to Israel, you don't need a traveling Mishkan. You can go build the Beit HaMikdash immediately in its proper place. You don't need something which is moving with you because you shouldn't be moving anymore. By the time they were supposed to get to Israel, they could have already built the Beit HaMikdash as opposed to just building the Mishkan. I'm just saying is that, think for a second. I know. Why are you asking this now? Go back to Bereishit.
But are you saying that this is really our natural border?
I'm saying it's part of what was promised to Abraham. Continue.
Really?
Yeah, don't tell anybody this. We have enough problems. We have enough problems. Okay, one second. You'll get another hint over here. Pasuk Tet, and I told you that this is one of our Be'et Tahis. Ve'omari lechem Be'et Tahi lemor, and I said to you at that time, which time are we talking about? What's the time frame? You now know the answer. What's the time frame? Which parsha? What parsha are we? Balotcha, right? At least now you know you're in Balotcha. Ve'omari lechem Be'et Tahi lemor, lo uchal levadis etetchem. I can't do this. Is that in Balotcha? Look, okay, we were just now in source number 4, which talks about when they move. That was Bahalotcha Perek Yud. Look at source 5, which is Bamidbar Perek Yud Aleph, the next chapter in Bahalotcha. Look at Pasuk Yudalid, Lo Uchal Anochi Levadi, let's say it's Kol'an. I can't do this. So, have I now convinced you that we have located what Moshe is referencing over here? It's a good question. Give me a second. Give me a second. See, there's actually two issues over here. And by the way, the Kli Yakar, which is source number 2, deals with that question. But first, let me say a couple things. One is, I hope that you all now realize that I've brought multiple pieces of evidence that Moshe is going back referring to Chorev, referring to leaving Chorev, referring to how we left Chorev, referring to what happens when we leave Chorev, and he talks about his own issues, what happens when he leaves Chorev, and everything that I've just now said took us to one place, and that one place is Parshat Balotcha, which means, in a certain sense, that whenever it is that we learned Parshat Balotcha and we didn't bother looking at this, we should realize that we're probably missing something because, you know, as important as all the other commentaries are, having Moshe Rabbeinu's retrospective on what happened then should probably be really, you know, up there on the list of commentaries. So this is very helpful because I told you, it's very easy to lose the narrative, lose the plot. We just found the plot. The plot is how we left, and again, there's this other side of it. we spend too much time there because we should have received 10 commandments and then, or Torah, if you will, and then go straight to Eretz Yisrael. There should not have been anything else in the middle, and there was, and it was too much time, and it was too long, and that then began a series of problems that will take place in terms of the stated objective, and the stated objective is going to capturing, settling, living in the land of Israel because something has gone wrong. So now you realize what Moshe's starting point of this speech is going to be is next part. What is the next thing you need to do? The next thing you need to do is to go to the land of Israel and do it right. Okay? You need to start going, do it right. Now, when does a parent or a religious leader tell you you need to do it right? After you did it wrong, which is exactly now understanding what is taking place in this speech that, which Moshe is giving. And when you talk about, oh, we're repeating the Torah, well, so far, again, this is a big, big book, and I'm not talking about the whole book, I'm talking about the beginning, that so far the repeating of the Torah is repeating the Torah for the purpose of not repeating our mistakes. And let's realize where we are, let's realize how we got here, and let's realize how we leave, because the truth is that we've embroiled ourselves in a terrible spiritual quagmire, which we never should have gotten ourselves into, and there was another way of doing it, and that was 11 days. Right? Just keep that on. 11, maybe. Correct. And that's behind everything what most... Right? Correct. That's certainly part of it. But again, 11 days, that's what was told by the very beginning... 40 years. How did we leave? Well, now going back to your point about how we left, well, how should we have gone? We should have left Sinai, which is a holy place, with this absolute confidence and understanding that we're about to go to a place that has no less holiness than Sinai. And a matter of fact, that we're leaving a place where the holiness will evaporate. As soon as we leave there, it would have a purpose for a moment. As soon as we leave, that purpose disappears, and it was just a necessary stop to get to a place with far more holiness. So therefore, now I'll say it again. So how do you leave Sinai? You leave Sinai with appreciation of what you received, with expectation and anticipation of where you're going, and now go back to what you asked. You asked, hold it, isn't this about, yeah, well, part of it is they ended up spending too much time there. They sense they spend too much time there, but not for the right reason. Not because we should already have been in a holier place, but the way that you put it in that midrash, which is found in the Yerushalmi, that they ran away from there like a kid running away from school. They were running away from holiness. They weren't running towards holiness, which means how do you leave Sinai? You leave Sinai saying, first of all, you leave Sinai by taking 3 steps back. Right, not by running away like the bell just rang in school. You take 3 steps back, and then as you turn and you say, thank you for everything I've received here, Sinai has accomplished what it needed to accomplish, and now we have an 11-day journey that we need to take, and this is going to and now we can just take all of this to another level and take it to a place that is true, absolute holiness. Let's read the Kli Yakar then, because I think that you kind of now get the sense about what is going on over here. He is going to get us to the spies. He's going to get us again, to how we messed this up in terms of doing what we're supposed to be doing. Which means, it's again, I think it's fascinating where he starts his speech, but now you know where he starts his speech. He starts his speech from the day that we leave Sinai. That's where we start. Why? Because that's the day that we should have been going towards Israel. And what happens instead? We don't go there. And the generation which is there doesn't end up going over there. And that generation doesn't know how or isn't interested in fighting for it. Let's look at the Kli Yakar, source number 2. Rav lechem shevet bahar hazeh, pnu v'su lechem. Zu tochach harishona. Al shanashim san'u et ha'aretz v'niteshvu bahar hazeh yeshiva shel keva. This is the first rebuke because the people detested, hated the land, and they preferred to stay by the mountain. V'lo panu pniyam el ha'aretz makom yuchad l'kiyam mitzvot. And they were not willing to go to the place to actually, you know, to actualize the mitzvot that they are receiving now. And by the way, staying by the mountain, that means all these laws that you're learning are just now completely theoretical. No, I didn't say that you can't keep mitzvot m'chutz l'aretz. I just said you can't do it seriously. Okay, was that not nice? Decompress.
Work it out.
They had to work it out. It is interesting that maybe such people, maybe such people specifically, should have the ability to fight for it. I understand. I understand your defense, and it's wonderful. It's great. Maybe you know, when we in 1948, there were a lot of Holocaust survivors who somehow walked out of hell and said, "Okay, well, they were given guns. They were given and go ahead and fight." I heard really an incredible story not that long ago. Maybe you were there when Rabbi J.J. Schachter told it. That there was a group of kids who were in this army preparatory program in Israel. You know, kids from America and other places come to Israel for the year. What do Israeli kids do for the year? I mean, by the way, it just comes down to the front. It goes down to the front. Not at that age. What it comes down to, that the frontal lobe is not quite developed yet. And the army officers know as well that you're better getting a kid coming in when they're 19 than when they're 18. Nonetheless, if you don't draft them right after high school, then who knows? But a lot of kids will take a year and prepare. And there are these various programs that prepare them in terms of values. And some are religious, teach them Torah. Some are not religious, and they teach them Zionist values. But there was one group, and I don't know what kind of group it was, but they were taken to Har Herzl, and they were taken to a particular section on Har Herzl. The leader showed them all of the graves, and all the graves had names in them except for one. There was one grave that didn't have any names, and I forgot exact how many. I think there were 22 graves over there. I think that was the number that he said, and 21 had names on it, one didn't. And he asked, you know, why does it not have a name on it? So that this was, they all fell in one battle, and it was the Battle of the Castel, and one of these people was most likely a Holocaust survivor that didn't have any other family. Again, left there, had nobody else, and the only 21 people who knew who he were the people that were buried next to him, and there was no other memory. And these kids were so upset with this, they said, we're going to try to find out who he is. We have to. I mean, has to. I mean, and by the way, it's great. No kids there. Just think you can Google, you can go look, you can go and find, and or use artificial intelligence and just figure anything out. And they took it upon themselves. No, we're going to figure this out. And a couple of months later, one of the kids calls this guy and said, we figured out who he was. And he says, really? How did you figure it out? He says, he's our brother. That's who it is. And we'll say Kaddish for him every year. And we're going to learn in his memory. And we're going to do things in his memory. But nonetheless, a lot of Holocaust survivors were given guns and go and fight. And I'm not arguing with you. I understand the argument of the mentality. There is a really... We'll get back to our Kli Yakar in a second. There's a really interesting way all the people who will die is framed. And that's in source number 6. Again, so interesting to read Sefer Dvarim as a commentary on Sefer Bamidbar. This is much more going to another episode, which is the spies. And after the spies, the whole generations are going to have to die. But look at the way it's framed in source 6. V'yomim asher halachnu mikadesh barnea ad asher avarnu et nachal zered. Again, instead of taking 11 days, it took us another 38 years. Atom kol hador anshei hamilchama mikerav hamachaneh kasher nishba Hashem lahem. Until the people who are soldiers die. It wasn't that clear the way that it's framed here. Anshei hamilchama. It says it again in Pasuk Ted Zayin there, on the top of the next page. V'yikasher tamu kolon shei mulchamamut bekerav am. Now we can go on and continue. And by the way, then it comes back again to Pasuk of Dalet. Kumusu v'ru et anachal arnon reinatati bedecha et sichon melech heshbon. By the way, that's where we started today. With sichon melech heshbon, ha'emariv et artzoach el rash v'tigar bo milchama. Very much in military terms. Very much in terms of you need to fight. Which means part of the commentary now, you're supposed to leave. And we're going to get a new land, so what do you expect? How do you get the new land? You get the new land, you're going to have to be ready to fight for it. And if they are not ready to fight for it, so then this generation of non-fighters has to be replaced by a new generation. But I don't know if any place in Bamidbar we ever got such a stark description of what the problem is. The problem is that these are not the right soldiers. And you can say, well, what do you mean? Well, you know, we can have every reason to understand this. But nonetheless, I find it really interesting the way that it's framed. So let's try again to get to this Kli Yakar. He says, this is the first piece of rebuke that you stayed too long over here. It's as if you became comfortable over there. And the land is where we're supposed to go to implement. Penu hasavu pneichem el haaretz v'su'u lachem el atzmut mikor al atzmut makor shelachem ki misham notzar chomer shel adam rishon. This place is the very core of humanity, and that's where Adam, it's just really, I mean, he just got very deep very quickly, saying, going back to various midrashim, this is where Adam was formed from. This is the epicenter. Kedev shemar la'avram lech lecha. And that's really beneath the surface of when God says to Avram lech lecha, it's going back to the core. He then goes on to talk, l'kama nase perush muvu'ar el toch chazu, and as we continue, it's going to become a lot, it's going to be explained in more depth, this rebuke. Makom shelamadatim alav Torah tifnu pneichem el haaretz makom shmirata Torah kilo amidrashikar el hamaase. You need to go to Israel because that's where you will implement the laws that you received at Sinai. But rather vatem belechtechem michorav ruach acheret haitayimachem. And nonetheless, by you there was this other spirit within you, and that is part of what pulls you and takes you, leads you astray. And a little bit further down, around 3-4 lines before the end of that paragraph, he writes, V'yesh omrim, sh'ashimam al shebarchu min ahar chorev kitinok aborech mibet ha-sefer. And some say the problem, not just they didn't want to go to Israel, is that they ran away. V'al ze amar rab lachem, kol hayamim asher shavtim bahar, lo yibenechem kimim achadim ba'ava otam, ele kimim rabim shel tzar. V'zeo rab lachem, that even the time that you spent on Sinai, it wasn't just like you liked the theoretical, you hated the theoretical also. You hated the learning, and you don't want Israel, and then you wonder why they're so miserable. They're so miserable because they just feel completely disconnected. So yeah, the Kliyakar is really interesting, and let me try to do a couple of more things that I wanted to get to. So far we got to the point where we've identified where Moshe is starting his speeches, what the Ba'ita he is, and then in Pasuk Ted Zayin, back in the first source again, Vatzaveet Shovtechem Ba'ita hi Lemar, and now he talks about the new judges. By the way, we are still in Ba'alotcha. Moshe says it's very, whatever, I can't do this myself, and that's where the other judges get appointed. And he says, Shemoa Ben Achechem Ushvatatem Tzedek Ben Ish Uvein achi, uvein gero. Lo tekerim panim b'mishpat, kakon gadol tishmaun. Lo tegum b'nei ish, ki mishpat lelokim hu. And all of this, you would think, is, oh, this is repetition of Torah. It's teaching us these laws. No. These laws are part of the narrative. What's the narrative? The narrative is that in order for us to continue, and by the way, look at, the Kli Yakar in Pasuk Tet, right, in the next paragraph, and he says, v'omar lechem b'eti hilemor b'eti mora be'etz ba'al hazman, what's the main point over here? It goes back to the same point. You need to go to the land, which means, and I'm going to say it again, to weave through all of these sources was not so easy. To weave through all the commentaries that I looked at was not so easy. To find exactly what this path is, one can argue, one could debate, but look at trying to, again, to find this focus. It's leaving Sinai, and that means going to Israel. Going to Israel, now he says, what are one of the rules of engagement in Israel? Which means creating judges, creating system, creating law, creating things which are done in a fair way, that will allow you to hold on to them. That's part of the rules of engagement. And don't get fooled into saying, we're just talking about law in an abstract sense. No, it's not an abstract sense. It's part of understanding exactly where it is that we should be moving to. So there is in this first perek a lot more details. I'll say it again. It's going to now stay in Bahalotcha, and then what happens there? What's the parasha after Bahalotcha? Sorry for putting you all on the spot. What happens next? Shlach. So what happens next? So that's the first parak here. It's Bahalotcha to Shlach. But what was supposed to happen by Shlach was supposed to go into Israel. That didn't work out very well. But why didn't we? So again, and that's where we move to. We move to now a retelling of the spies, because what's the agenda of all of this? It's getting to Israel. What happened? It didn't work out well. So I'm skipping the spies itself and moving down to Pasuk. Lamed Hashem Elokeichem Olech Lachem Hu Yilachem Lachem Kachol Asher Asai Itchem Mitzrayim La'Einechem Uvmirar Asher Ita Asher Nasacha Hashem Elokeich Kasher Yisa Ishet Beno. It's really interesting because part of what Moshe says is, I can't carry them, am I their mother? And over here it says, and God carries them like a car. This is another reference, by the way, to Baalotcha, which is really quite interesting. And you did not believe in God. What does it mean to believe in God? Now, again, some will focus on the past and some will focus on the future, and I think it doesn't make a difference. Because what it really means is that you haven't internalized the past to be able to have faith in the future. If you would have internalized that it's God who's been taking care of us this whole path, the whole time, all the way through getting to this point, then extrapolating the next, what will happen next, should be very simple, because look how the way that God has been protecting of us. But this next stage and how it's going to take place is exactly where things get a little bit more complicated. But that's such an important line, because again, it's Baalotcha leading into Shlach, it's leaving Sinai, supposed to go to Israel, and all of this is repeated for one reason. And that one reason is, don't do these same mistakes again, do this right, the next step is Israel. The next step is Israel, and do this the right way. And to go to Israel, you're going to have to fight for this, and you have to fight for this. Those who could not fight for this, that those soldiers who were it was too much, and that whole army gets put aside, and now we need to raise a new army. We need to raise a new generation. And I'm saying, it's so much clearer now when you realize, again, these various aspects. Let me get to the last thing that I wanted to get to today. I mean, if you look at Rav Hirsch in source number 9, Be'etahi, Manad L'Kvoshe Ta'aretz. Again, it goes back to the, right? It goes back to this point of the war. Beit Yomaratim Lachoshet Haaretz Ami Ushevet Amim Chazakim Umlundei Milchama Ach Boto Sha'a Lo Imanti Etchem B'Neshek. It's really interesting. You were not ready. You were not prepared in terms of being able to go and to fight. I told you I started with the remez, and I wanted to end with a remez. In source number 14, we have the Sfat Emet. First Rashi in 11, Uvedvar hazeh, shum avtichim laviyim el aretz, enem aminim. What don't they believe? So Rashi isn't going to the land. Why? Because they never internalized how God took care of us and carried us and protected us in the desert. Wonderful. Source 14 is Sfat Emet. Sfat Emet, this is the part of the Gera dynasty. He was a grandson of the Chidushe Harim, who was the, if I'm not mistaken, the first Gera Rebbe. The Sfat Emet, his parents both died by the time he was 5 years old, and he was raised by his grandfather, who was the Rebbe. And then he later on will take over for him. He was first asked, as soon as his grandfather died, he thought he was too young, someone else took over as an interim Rebbe, and then he became the Rebbe. B'shem Mori V'zikni, so now he's telling you that he's teaching something that he heard from his grandfather from the Chidush Yerim. Al Pasuk Acharei HaKato going right away to Kabbalistic Hasidic imagery, that after this, because these were spiritual boundaries, if you will, klipot gedolot, sichon melech cheshbon, shoresh hamachshavot raot, sichon melech cheshbon. What's cheshbon? What a cheshbonot? Accounting and thoughts, it's numbers and thought. So therefore, they needed to overcome boundaries. So one boundary, I told you, this is remez, right? So they need to overcome sichon melech cheshbon shorish hamachshavot raot v'neged ze tefillin shorosh, and that's the tefillin shorosh is this king of false thinking. That's what it is. And the tefillin shorosh should counter this king of false thinking. Og ba'ashtarot ba'ederi hama'ase v'neged ze tefillin shoyad ad kan dvarav. And he said that Og, who's full of physicality, there's also a hint in terms of the Aramaic of ederi, saying is that has to do with tefillin shoyad. So therefore, it's the mind and it's the thought, and you need to get by false understandings of both of these concepts to continue. V'chein kativ b'tfilin l'man tichyeh Torat Hashem b'ficha. By the way, it's interesting, the parshiot tefillin, v'yaki v'yacha, right, when you're going to come to the land, and it also focuses on the land. V'kach achar hanachat tefillin v'hitakshrut machshava maaseh, the tefillin unifies the thought and the actions, the hand and the mind, yuchlin l'kod kriyat shema, right, k'mach v'mokom achar. Only then can you say Shema properly, as I wrote another place. V'chein haya b'klalot Yisrael k'mo shenoheg b'pratut. V'emet ki zeh remez l'tfilin demari alma. And he says, but the truth is, it's not just our tfilin. This is a remez of the remez. It's actually a remez of the tfilin which God wears. We'll see more about that in a second. K'mo shebnei Yisrael mishabdim libam uvatlim et kol machshevot ma'asim ra'im b'avor ritzon habarei yitbarach. Just like man overcomes their barriers, spiritual and physical, God, as it were, God gets rid of all of these other powers of the other side, as it were, and that's this battle against Sichon and Og. What he's referring to is source number 15, the Gemara in Brachot, Amar Rabbi Abin Bar Adda, Amar Rabbi Yitzhak, Minayin Shekadosh Baruch Hu Miniach Tefillin. How do you know that God puts on tefillin? By the way, this is what we refer to in the Anim Zmirot. What do we say? Kesher Tefillin, Herela Anav. This goes back to, this is really a commentary when he says, you can't see my front, you can see my back. So what does he see in the back? He sees the tefillin. Right? So over here it says that, how do you know God wears tefillin? Shenemar. And it says, Nishba Hashem Biyimino, Uvizroa uzo, bimino zu Torah, shenema bino eshtat lama, uvizroa uzo elu tefillin, shenema shem oz lamo yitain. I mean, that's what gives people power. Uminayin shet tefillin oz hem li sero dechtiv, ru kol amay aretz, ki Hashem nikra alecha viru mimka. V'tanya, Rabbi Lezer Agadol omer, elu tefillin shebarosh, omer le Rav Nachum b'Yitzchak l'Rav Chaya Baravin, hainu hani tefillin demari alma, Maktiv Bahu. What does it say in God's tefillin? Which means, instead of fighting and saying, what are you talking about? It's saying, okay, let's take this anthropomorphism and let's just go to the next step. What does God put in his tefillin? Right? Isn't that a great question?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what do we have in our tefillin? We have, among other things, the Shema, that God is one. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We believe in one God. Right? We can't say the Shema until the tefillin and unite the thoughts and the power. What's in God's tefillin? Amr le, umika amchi Yisrael, gai echad ba'aretz. We say that God is one, and God says that we are one. But it's more than just one. Gai echad ba'aretz. Ba'aretz. So that's part of what the Sfat, that's part of what the Sfat Emet was feeling over here, is that the power over here of the tefillin, and the tefillin of God, as it were, is then what gives us this ability to go in, and we'll end up with a teaching from Rav Kook in Source 16. This is found in Moadei Araya. Pam bikra be'eretz kfutzat yudim mipoland. A group of Jews came to visit from Poland. Anshei kalkala mischar, people involved in commerce. Ulefnei yetziatam shuvam nifkashu maran harav kuk zatzal. Al shalato shal rav madua lo yalu arza uvekaspam yivbasu kan et matzavam va'af yisayu la'achirim mitasuka. And when Rav Kook asked them the question, why don't you come over here and establish your work over here and your business over here, and you'll help others, you build a kind. And by the way, you realize the tragedy that if Rav Kook, who dies in 1935, is telling people, you know, why don't you come here, and people that came here are going to be the ones who ended up surviving, even though they thought that, you know, that Israel is backward and primitive and so on, but who knows the future? Hishivulo anshei asakim shehen kfar chishvu cheshbonot. They did their mathematical calculations and so on. That they will not make the same amount of money as they will in Chutz Laaretz. He give Harav Amar. Rav Kook responded and said, Avotenu hakodmim, our ancestors, lefnei knisatam l'Eretz Yisrael, before they come to Israel, hayta lehem milchama im Sichon melech cheshbon. They had to fight with Sichon, the king of Cheshbon, and they were victorious. V'zeba lamdenu shebederech l'eretz Yisrael. Now teaches you on the way to Israel. Tzurchim l'tgaber al kol ha'cheshbonot. You have to, before you come to Israel, you have to defeat all of the calculations that you were making. V'gamat ha'cheshbon hanir'eh le'ayin le'mata et adat ladif et ha'yeshiva b'chutz l'eretz. Tzurchim l'adat she'eretz Yisrael hi l'mala me'ha'cheshbonot ha'regilim shel b'nei adam. That living in Israel works in a different type of a calculation, and on the way to Israel, you need to defeat the Melech Cheshbon. So, as I told you today, we started with the Remez and we ended with the Remez, but the Remez over here is very much what this is all about. Am Yisrael needed to understand, if we go back to that Sfat Emet or from the Chiddush Harim, they needed to understand that the entering into the land of Israel is going to be this combination of the Tefillin Sheyad and the Tefillin Sherosh. God, just look, God has done all these things for us till now. He's going to help us on the next stage as well. Yes, we're going to have to fight, right? We're going to have to use our minds, but use your minds as well and defeat the Melech Cheshbon because God is there with us. And instead of go back to the Meraglim, instead of the way that we left Sinai, instead of all the things, again, this is Parshat Balotcha moving forward, how everything worked out wrong. The remez behind all of this is overthinking, not having enough faith, not feeling that our hands are dedicated to God and our minds are dedicated to God. And when those things come together, ki yaviachal aretz, when you enter the land, so we defeat. So some people are still struggling. Some people don't even know yet. Some people don't even struggle yet with Melech Cheshbon because they don't even bother to do the calculations. And then they start doing the calculations and they say, oh, how can we possibly, we'll make more money someplace else. So yes, there were a group of Jews from Poland who told Rav Kook that as well, that we did the calculations and we are better off staying in Poland. And I said, and historically that sounds like such an unfortunate story, but Rav Kook's response is that there's different and it's true, there are different calculations over here, and it works completely differently, but the calculation has to have within it, and it says you don't believe in God, and what was the context? Look what he's done till you, look at who do you think gave you all that money that you're making right now in Chutzlah? Like, what are you talking about? Who was it that was guiding you along this whole way? And once you extrapolate from that, then that next step becomes possible. But some people have a very hard time, and some people see Og Melech HaBashan, and they see a very, very big adversary, which they don't know how they're going to defeat. But the answer how they're going to defeat it is because God also wears tefillin, and God's tefillin is Mika Amcha Yisrael, Goyachad Baaretz.